So hi. So as Peter said, I'm going to show you how we use SysLogNG at in Lyon. So I'm going to show you a few use cases we have, destinations, sources, some examples on alerting and enriching log messages. And I'm going to show you a few things about how we automate the configurations and monitoring SysLogNG itself. So very quickly, the architecture we have. So on this picture, you see all the clients. We have about 1,500 clients. So all the nodes, basically, they have locally SysLogNG running. So they are sending their logs to three central instances of SysLogNG. So we have no relays. The logs are sent using the newish syslog protocol, so the structured version using RFC 5424, and then we have three other types of roles for the system: alerta, real time, and indexers. So alerta is more or less Nagios and emails. Real-time is a software called Riemann, and indexers are just Elasticsearch nodes where we store the data. These all are sent using native SysLogNG drivers, so HTTP protocol buffers or NSCA. NSCA is used, I'll show that later, using a program destination. So on the hardware side, the system is quite lightweight, except for Elasticsearch, of course. The three VMs running the analyzers, so the three VMs running SysLogNG, are very lightly used. Most of them use only 1 gigabyte of memory at maximum, and maybe 2 CPUs when we have bursts. Real-time nodes as well, and indexers, these are the big guys, costing a few money, and where we have to optimize things. So very quickly, why SysLogNG? RSyslog is installed everywhere on RHEL, so why should we care? It's very flexible, that what we thought at the first. It's portable, we can install it everywhere. It's fast and has very low resource footprint, as you could see on the analyzer, on the central SysLogNG servers. But most of all, it's very friendly. The people behind it are very friendly. Pull requests are accepted very, very quickly, and the mailing list is very helpful and quite low volume. I mean, the messages are really very, very pertinent, no noise. A few alternatives we looked at the time, I'm not going to go into detail. RSyslog wasn't flexible enough, and Logstash was too resource, too slow, and Beats didn't exist at the time, very quickly. So how do we store logs? We send them to Elasticsearch. So maybe a little more info on the driver. It's using the Java implementation of Elasticsearch. So it's a native protocol, the native libraries. So it's quite fast. And we use it supports many different protocols, the two native ones, transport and node, and you can also use the REST interface to index documents. We implemented two additional modes, client modes, which are SearchGuard and HTTPS. And we're using this configuration, so don't look at the details. It may look scary, but it's just to show you that it's very configurable. This config uses a disk cache. It uses the HTTPS client mode. We use a client certificate-based authentication for the HTTPS. And we tell it also to send the data to 6 different nodes, or 5 on this example. And we use a bulk insert using 1,000 messages. That's basically what the config says, but it's very flexible. If you ever use that destination, I can suggest that you first look at the blog post from Peter, which explains the problems you may have with Java, because as you know, Java doesn't install its libraries at a standard location, so SysLogNG, when it starts, doesn't find it. So you need to do a little bit of hand work there. Use a large disk buffer is very interesting because you can restart your Elasticsearch clusters without losing any data. And we found that using a bulk size of 1,000 is about right for our workload, which is around 1,000 messages per second, with bursts up to 20,000 from time to time. So a few examples on how we do alerting inside SysLogNG. Nagios, for instance, we still use Nagios, as still many people. So this is just using a program destination. So basically it pipes the messages directly to the program on standard input. And the program is just a very thin wrapper around SendNSCA. And as you can see in the template, which is the option which says what actually we sent to the program, you can see a few variables: Nagios host, Nagios service, Nagios state. So these are variables which are attached to the syslog messages and which control then what the destination actually does. So for instance, the state will tell you if it's a warning or a critical alert. Email, same thing, and we use the SMTP, which is a native destination, and we use variables to route the message, the email, to the right user, for instance, or we can also control the subject and the content of the email. We also use Riemann, which is a real-time stream processing engine. Same thing, there is a native destination which we can configure with many options. And so these are just the destinations. So how do you actually route the messages to the different destinations? So as Peter showed, we can use a PatternDB. So on this PatternDB, which I have to scroll so you see it, this is just a rule which will match messages like this one. So this is a message from OpenAFS, you know, the deprecated file system, where my partition is full. So I want to get an email when my partition is full. And so when the messages match this rule, we will add a few values, enrich the log message like that. We will add a tag, F2 email. It's just a flag we add to the message. And we will set the variables like email to. I want this email, if this message matches, sent to the AFS administrator, which is also me, but you get the idea. So putting it all together, we create a filter which will match all the messages which have this flag. Then we connect the sources with this bit of parser I just showed you, and we have an internal log statement which will say all the messages which are flagged as they should be sent email to, they should be sent to the email destination. So that's a complete example of how we do a few alerting workflows. A few other examples on what we use alerting on. Some GPFS messages are being tracked. Node reboots also. So we have a couple of rules which resemble node reboots. And this is actually the example which will lead me to my next slide. Node reboots will not be sent to all the sysadmins, because for instance these rules were asked by the person who administrates the worker nodes. So they will actually send only an email if the machine which rebooted was a worker node. So how does it actually know that it was a worker node? So that's what we do when we enrich the log messages. So on every log message which goes out to the analyzers, we also send along some additional information like the machine's role, it's a worker node, And also a few facts from Puppet. It's RHEL 7 or RHEL 6. It's Red Hat or it's Debian, whatever. So every message which goes out has this information as well, which allows us to route the alerts to the right people. And how this works is that we enrich the long messages and we send them using the RFC 5424, the new syslog protocol, which enables us to send all this additional data along with the message itself. So this enables us to do interesting things like how many messages are generated by scientific Linux machines versus CentOS machines, for instance. We can also do this using the new add contextual data parser. So we will probably use this in the next version of the config because it's easier to use one file which is handled by Puppet containing the relevant information than to manually add rewrite rules to the config. But it will have the same effect. A few miscellaneous things. One parser, one type of messages we actually collect that is not syslog is email. So there is a new source, mbox source. It's just a wrapper on the file source. So using some configuration magic, we are able to tell syslogng to actually read email. There's a bit of Python in there and a few date parsers, but we basically read email using syslogng. Seriously? Well, why would we do that? There's still some tools or some appliances which only send emails, or like if you look at Yum or Cron, there's actually more data in the email than there is in the implementation of syslog they have. And I really love Mutt, but I hate email. I prefer looking at this kind of data in Kibana, because in Kibana, I just want to know what happened to the RPM DB. And if the result of the search is an email or a syslog, I don't care. If I use this trick, I can have both in the same location. Another idea which we use is the correlation. So this example is from HPSS. The message on the top is just one event. It's some operation started with some metadata and a date, and maybe an hour later or a day later or a week later, we have a second message saying, hey, the operation completed. And there were that many bytes sent out. But so you could say, I will just use the second message and compute the throughput, but you can't because you don't have the operation start in the log. So what we do, we correlate the two and compute throughputs. So that's something you can do very easily using either PatternDB or the group by parser. How do you handle automation? So there's many modules out there. The first one is Forensible. I haven't used that one myself because we use Puppet, but I know the person who wrote this one, so you might want to look into it. We use two modules for managing the syslogng config. We use PatternDB, which is the one we wrote. So it enables you to handle all your PatternDB files in Hira, and I prefer YAML than XML. But it's also the good thing is also you can separate different things that you cannot do in the native format, like actions. Actions are things that will trigger and do things based on your rules. So the second module we use for Puppet is the syslogng module. It was initially written by a Balabit employee, and we recently inherited the module, but didn't have any time to improve it, so contributions are really welcome if you ever get to use it. Monitoring, so how do we monitor SysLogNG itself? So SysLogNG has a control socket, so you can, and with a command line helper, you can hit it and ask for statistics about SysLogNG itself. As you can see, it's very detailed. You can ask for number of processed messages per source, per destination. You can also query the number of dropped messages. If you have dropped messages, you can put alerts on these. We use CollectD, very simple plugin that will connect to the socket and collect the statistics. So that way we can have nice dashboards and control if syslog is working well. In this case, we had a big incident where the queue, so that's SysLogNG's queue on the three analyzers, was starting to grow, and finally it finished, it finally flushed itself. So here are the errors, because one of the queue was full. A few things you might run into when, if I convinced you to use SysLogNG. The Apple version is quite old now, so all the things, most of the things I showed you won't work. You need 3.7. But the unofficial packages are built very, very often, and they run in production at our site, so they're fine. The problem is, oh, I think I made a mistake here. It's not this version, but the version of the RPMs, which I just talked about, they have some hard dependencies on things like, so CloudInit, for instance, has a dependency on rsyslog, so you cannot remove rsyslog, which would be okay, but it shares the same log rotate configuration, so sometimes they go out of sync. And when you do yum upgrades, you end up with a conflict. But that's all right. You can always solve it easily. The same happened with libvirt some time ago. So I accidentally removed rsyslog on the OpenStack compute nodes, and libvirt was uninstalled on all of them. And as you can imagine, it can be a bit catastrophic to remove libvirt on OpenStack compute nodes. And it was fixed by, not me, someone else. Another thing which people often run into is when running LDAP on the on NSS, if you use the files that SysLogNG creates will be owned by the value of this option. So if they're owned by, for instance, if you write here root or probably another user, it will try to look it up in LDAP. And if LDAP is down, it will block. And when LDAP restarts, it will try to syslog and block too, because this one blocks. So it's a deadlock between both applications. The same happens with DNS. If you have network destination in your config, you should probably put them in etc hosts just to avoid a problem when starting up. Both can be worked around easily, although I don't have the confirmation that this really works, but because we don't use LDAP yet. A few other destinations which might be of interest, which I added recently after listening to the talks here. You've got the HTTP destination. So you've got two HTTP destinations. If you prefer the Java version, you can use it. Otherwise, it's libkernel-based. There's also two implementations of Kafka. One is the Java one, one is the C one. You can write to SQL, and this one is a work in progress to have a collect-T destination. Okay, that was it.
Okay, questions for Fabio?
No, Okay, so one of the things that I've been running into when I've been using RELP with our syslog is that even under RELP, if I have the far end go down, syslog then backs all the way up, and I'm trying to do caching to the to some of the intermediate servers so I don't lose, you know, logging. How does syslog NG deal with that? Do you do the caching to a forwarder and stuff? And
so until the disk-based caching was available, we used memory caching, which works well, but if you have 10,000 messages a second, it fills up quite quickly.
Yeah.
So, but now that the disk-based destination is available, it works. We activated it and it works well. You have to consider there's two modes from a disk-based cache. You have reliable and unreliable. Unreliable is nice because it only caches on disk if the destination isn't fast enough or dead. Whereas reliable always writes on disk and then sends. And if you have a slow VM, you basically fill up the queue before it goes to Elasticsearch just because your local storage is too slow. So we use unreliable queue.
Okay, but so if you fill up the queue, then does that actually slow down the stuff downstream then?
That depends. If you have multiple destinations,
uh-huh.
That's called, you have an option, I forgot it, but you can choose if it slows down the other sources or not. So there's a setting which we don't really use because we have our main destination is Elasticsearch, and it's usually the only one slowing down, so we don't have to worry about that.
Okay, so when you were having your real time and your Elastic, they go in at the same time, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
They do.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Fabio? If not, let's thank him again.